Called the gulag of our time, the detention facilities in the Guantanamo Bay Naval Base has been the facility where the U.S. Department of Defense has detained and interrogated what has been deemed extraordinary dangerous people and to prosecute them for war crimes. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are going to look at whether the United States can justify the continued operations of the military prison at Gitmo. Let's get started. United States presence in Guantanamo Bay began in 1898 following the Spanish-American War. And in 1903, the United States designated its land in Cuba as a naval station. But following the terrorist attacks in New York City and Washington, D.C. on September 11, 2001, the United States opened a military prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to hold suspected terrorists. Now, since 2002, 779 men have been brought to the detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay. The largest group were from Afghanistan, with Saudi Arabia and Yemenis running the top three of the 50 nationalities represented. Now, currently, many of the 779 men have either been released, transferred, or died, leaving only 30 men currently residing in the facility. Many of these men are deemed forever prisoners, because the State Department cannot find a single country in the world who would be willing to receive even those men who have been cleared for release. Why? Well, because these men, despite never being officially charged due to the gridlock, which is happening with the 9/11 trial, are suspected to still have been involved in some way with a terrorist organization. In fact, according to the most recent statistics from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, 204 out of the 676 released detainees are either confirmed to have re-engaged or are suspected of re-engaging in terrorist activities. However, only 8 men held in Guantanamo have been convicted, and 4 of those convictions have been reversed. Now, resistance to closing the facilities at Gitmo has been mainly Republican-led, and despite some minor actions being taken by Democrats when they controlled the Oval Office, none have made the actual move to completely close the facility. Is this because those elected to office lack courage or don't see the facility, which once dominated the headlines, as a priority? Let's discuss with our panel, Steve Gill, host of The Steve Gill Show and political commentator, as well as Andy Worthington, who is an investigative journalist. Thank you so much for joining me, gentlemen. Andy, I want to start with you. Should the United States still maintain the base and the detention center at Guantanamo Bay?
Well, no, of course not. I mean, even President Bush in his second term recognized that it had been a mistake. It should have been closed a long, long time ago. Obviously, President Obama made efforts to do so. There was significant Republican pushback. It's just such a great shame that it's still open, because it is a legal, moral, and ethical abomination. And a great shame for the United States every day that it's open.
Well, Steve, there has been questions regarding the prisoners at Gitmo almost since its origination. You actually were there in 2005 as a guest of then Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld in the Department of Defense. Almost 20 years later, do you believe you were actually given a true look at the facility at that time, or were you just shown the image the DOD wanted Americans to see?
I think I saw exactly what was there. You know, what we were seeing from the media at that time were these pictures of grassy fence lines and outdoor facilities, when in reality, it was the most modern prison facility in the world. So what the media was showing was dramatically different than what we were actually seeing in terms of the conditions, the treatment of the detainees and others. I do think that it's a moral, ethical conundrum of what you do now that you've had them. How do you let them go when nobody wants to take them? How do you let them go when they are highest of likelihood of recidivism back into the terrorism activities that got them there in the first place? And the challenge is, you can't really bring them to the United States, where they're going to be subject to the protections of the Constitution. If you're going to have a military tribunal, you have to do it somewhere. And like it or not, Gitmo is about the only location.
Well, that's the thing, Andy. You know, you mentioned that you think that it should probably never have been opened in the first place. Where do you suspect these sorts of suspected terrorists, possibly even the trials that go along with them, where should they be held, and where should we hold these prisoners? Do you want to put them amongst the civilian population in American prisons?
Well, first of all, I must stress that of the 30 men still held, 16 of them have been unanimously approved for release by high-level U.S. government review processes. The reason that they haven't been freed yet is because of the political difficulty of finding countries that will take them. But it's not, as you mentioned in your introduction, because of any associations with terrorism that are attached to these men. That's simply not the case. I obviously agree that we all have a problem with what to do with the 9 men who are currently facing charges at Guantanamo. I think 2 of them are agreeing to a plea deal, which means that we've got six or seven men held at Guantanamo. 5 men accused of involvement in the 9/11 trials, 1 man accused of involvement in the USS Cole attack in 2000. And the question of what to do with these men is the really sticky one. You know, everyone else who is held there really, really should be released. Now, the problem is that the military commissions that were set up to try these men are tainted through the use of torture. These men were all tortured in CIA black sites. And the problem is that torture is incompatible with the pursuit of justice. And I think what we've seen with these trials is that they just go round and round and round endlessly, and they never reach a conclusion. You know, this is profoundly shameful for everyone involved, not least for the families and relatives of the 9/11 victims who are receiving no closure, no justice. So I think the only way out for this is for there to be some kind of plea deal whereby these men admit to what they are accused of. We would finally get the truth. And where they would continue to be held, but would be held under circumstances where they're treated appropriately. And, you know, these are aging men with physical and mental health problems that are not able to be adequately addressed at Guantanamo. I think it would be, you know, it would be appropriate to see these things take place as a way of bringing things to a conclusion at Guantanamo. But I don't know whether we're going to see that, because it remains so politically toxic, particularly, I think, for Republicans, but, you know, for some Democrats as well.
Well, Andy, I've got to follow up with what you questioned about. If there's nothing concerning about these men, why aren't these other countries willing to take them? Why would these other countries say, no, keep them out of my borders?
Oh, I think that there are ongoing discussions between the State Department and various host countries. I think the reason that nothing has happened yet is because it's politically difficult for the Biden administration. The Biden administration, you know, there is almost no majority anywhere within the U.S. Congress that allows the Democrats to behave in a way that they don't have to constantly look over their shoulders as to what the Republicans are going to do. And because the Republicans have made Guantanamo such a toxic issue, then it's problematical at the moment to do something that would give them an opportunity to leap on the Biden administration and suggest that they're, you know, mollycoddling terrorists, when what they're trying to do, as I've pointed out, is release and find new homes for men who have been unanimously approved for release. So it's a political issue. I don't think there's anything more to it than that.
Steve?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, when you are capturing terrorists on the battlefield, you don't have the opportunity to put up yellow police tape, gather evidence, you know, take witness statements and prove a case like you would in a normal court of law. So some of these guys that are denying that they had anything to do with terrorism or planning or anything else, it's not a matter that they didn't. It's a matter of, can you prove it based upon how they were, you know, detained or captured in the first place? There was one of the episodes that was described to me when I was at Guantanamo Bay that there was one of these so-called terrorists that was about to be released. And as he was signing his papers to leave, all of a sudden he reached down for his reading glasses. And one of the quick-thinking soldiers observing said, wait a minute, the lower-level drivers and guys that were cleaning out the stalls of the animals weren't wearing reading glasses. So they ran him back through the scrutiny, and it turns out he was a much higher actor in the process than they thought at that time, based upon the difficulty of proving anything. I think the other thing is when you have these folks, the fear, and it's not just Republicans, I think Democrats as well, that when they are released, they go back out, go back into the practice of terrorism. And, you know, does it matter if it's 30%, 40%, 50%? Every death after you let that guy go is blood on the hands of those who approved it and released them. And I think it's not necessarily, I think, that Democrats fear what the Republicans might do next. It's what they fear the terrorists might do next that would be blamed on them.
Well, Steve, in your former life, I know that you were an attorney. So I have to ask you, what rights do these prisoners have? They're obviously from other countries, the majority of them, here in the United States. Not saying, you know, what are they guaranteed?
Well, that's one of the big challenges. Once you let them step foot in the United States, start going through the court process in the U.S., in most cases, they're going to be granted the protections of the Constitution, even if they've perform their terrorist activities, somewhere else around the world. That's been one of the justifications for having military tribunals, which have been historically how these kinds of situations have been handled, you know, for centuries. So you don't bring them into the typical court of law because that opens up a whole Pandora's box of what rights should they get, what rights are they entitled to, and how will they abuse those rights. Keep in mind, again, when I was in Guantanamo Bay, the soldiers there were not wearing their name tags on their uniforms because in some cases, the attorneys for these terrorists were getting the names of those that were the jailers, and then somehow they were getting identified and they were getting threatened. So the soldiers couldn't even wear their name tags when they were at Guantanamo Bay for fear of the risk to themselves and their families. These are a difficult and different set of defendants than any else in the world, including anywhere here in the United States.
Well, and Andy, I've got to ask you, now that the United States supposedly is out of Iraq and Afghanistan, at least officially, does the U.S. still have jurisdiction to hold prisoners from the region?
Well, clearly it shouldn't. But, you know, I mean, there are so many issues going on here. I mean, you know, no one is in any doubt that a small number of the people held at Guantanamo have been associated with terrorism. In many other cases, the people that were sent to Guantanamo were foot soldiers. They were not terrorists in any sense. They had gone to Afghanistan to fight with the Taliban against the Northern Alliance before the 9/11 attacks happened. And afterwards, they were swept up. And so many of these people, along with a lot of completely innocent people who ended up by mistake, ended up at Guantanamo. So as soldiers, they should have long ago been released because the conflict with which they were seized had come to an end. But especially following the withdrawal of the United States from Afghanistan, they should have been. The problem is that the position that's taken by, parts of the administration and parts of the United States government is that associations that these men allegedly had with al-Qaeda persist even though the hostilities have come to an end. So, you know, these are claims that they stayed in an al-Qaeda-affiliated guest house 21, 22, 23 years ago, which are supposed to justify carrying on holding them. I think that that's simply intolerable. And I think that it is part of the problem that is involved with the establishment of Guantanamo in the first place, where what the United States did so fundamentally wrongly was to insist that it could hold people without charge or trial, without any rights whatsoever, failing to recognize that the only two ways of depriving people of their liberty lawfully is to charge them with a crime and put them on trial, or hold them as prisoners of war under the Geneva Conventions. So 22 years on, we're still stuck with this foundational problem of Guantanamo, that this was a prison established to strip people of their rights whatsoever. And I must say that, you know, those 16 men who are awaiting release, they've been waiting for years. And the reason they haven't been freed is because the decisions that were taken to release them were purely administrative. In other words, the law is not involved. They cannot go before a judge to ask why it is that the United States said it no longer wanted to hold them and is still doing so. They are essentially prisoners of the executive. And, you know, and I have to say that the shameful thing after 22 years is that a prison where the men who were brought there at the beginning were brought there explicitly to be held without rights is a place where still men that the United States says that it doesn't want to hold still remain as fundamentally without rights as they were on the day that the prison opened. And, you know, and that's just shameful. There's no way of dressing it up in any other way. That is just shameful.
Interesting. Well, Steve, Andy, I appreciate you both being on. Hold right there. Did you know there is a tie between a recent contender for president and the death of three inmates at Guantanamo Bay? Well, let's dig deeper after the break with our panel.
Video of alleged abuse by an officer. Today, a sheriff's deputy in Columbia, South Carolina, forcibly removed a student from a classroom at Spring Valley High School.
I saw him just talking to her, whispering to her, and initially, you know, I didn't think it was a problem because I knew that she was just this quiet student in the class.
Someone looked at the police officer and says, here is law enforcement at its worst. Clearly, attacking, abusing power and influence. And then there are others who says this is what's wrong with public school. Poorly behaved, undisciplined black children.
He was there enforcing a law that made it a crime to, quote, disturb schools in any way. That means any disturbance that any kid causes in school is a crime.
Using force is never pretty, but necessary at times. People are never going to change their minds. Some people will never change their minds about the video. They think I was wrong, and that's it.
Welcome back. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you are watching the 360 View. The worst loss of life at the detention facility occurred in June of 2006. This is when three inmates were found hanging from their necks with hands and feet bound with rags in their throats. A 27-year-old member of the Judge Advocate General Corps and the most junior JAG in the camp was assigned to start collecting the initial evidence, which would later be used in the investigation. That officer, Lieutenant Ron DeSantis, and what he collected and saw would later be used to concur with the base commander's assessment that the three prisoners had killed themselves as an active asymmetrical warfare waged against the U.S. We are back and going to continue our discussion about the relevancy of the detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay with Steve Gill, host of the Steve Gill Show and political commentator, and Andy Worthington, who is an investigative journalist. Steve, I'm going to start with you this segment because advocates for those being held at Guantanamo Bay say that there are some inconsistencies and contradictions with that specific case of the death of the three prisoners. Do you think if Governor Ron DeSantis would have been successful in his quest for the GOP nomination, this could have been made an issue for him?
I think it would have certainly deserved a second look. My thought as you were describing that is, did Ron also investigate the Jeffrey Epstein death in New York prison? Just on its face, the terms of that investigation sounds a little weak. And again, it sounds like a top-down ordered investigation rather than a real thorough investigation.
Well, Andy, now to the present time, do you actually think the entire facility should be shut down, or can you find any purpose for it in the future?
No, I mean, I can find no purpose for its existence. And I think, you know, the fact that no prisoner has been sent to Guantanamo since the spring of 2008 is a pretty resounding sign, really, of what a bad idea it was. We had 4 years of Donald Trump, who started off enthusiastically saying that he wanted to send men there. And even with the people surrounding him, you know, who one would have thought were sympathetic to his drive to expand Guantanamo, to fill it up with bad guys. Obviously, the word that came down was sensible. Was this is a failed institution. It's a failed experiment. It isn't able to deliver justice to people. All it's ever done throughout its history is deliver various forms of torture and abuse, which have then proven embarrassing for the United States government. So I think it's absolutely time for it to close. As I mentioned earlier, the problem is not so much the men who have been approved for release. These men should be freed, and they should be freed as swiftly as possible. The problem is the men who have been charged with serious acts of terrorism, of which there are a handful of men, and the trial system that is supposed to be delivering justice to them is broken. And so the question is, what happens to these men? Now, you know, I think we can all remember back in President Obama's first term in office, there was a proposal to bring these men to a federal court in the southern, in New York, where they would be prosecuted. And Obama, unfortunately, I think, backed away from that under a huge amount of Republican criticism, putting them back in Guantanamo, where this military commission system doesn't work. So, I mean, is it possible that we would eventually end up with some kind of leadership that will be prepared to say, let's bring these men to the United States mainland to prosecute them? Let us end this story. That's the only other way that the story ends, other than, as I said, you know, the plea deals that have been discussed for several years now with these men, or the reality as it is now, which is that nothing happens. They're warehoused in Guantanamo for the rest of their lives. They get more ill. They're not looked after. And, you know, at some point down the line, maybe decades from now, the last of these people at Guantanamo who, for whom justice was never delivered in any way, you know, die and the prison is over. I mean, those are the options as far as I can see.
Well, Andy, you know what? Keith Olbermann does not necessarily agree with you that needs to be shut down. In fact, he says he believes Trump should be arrested and he should be detained in Gitmo. Let's take a listen.
If he is not on the presidential ballot in November, to chaos and bedlam, his lawyers have told the Supreme Court that that is what will ensue if it does not do what he says. Trump has stochastically threatened the Supreme Court of the United States. It is time. Detain him and send him to Gitmo, like any other terrorist. Get the...
Steve, could we ever see a time when Gitmo could house domestic criminals like has been suspected, like accused Trump, or even those who have been convicted for their part in January 6th, which, by the way, in modern times, are kind of at the same place as those prisoners in Gitmo who's been there for so long. They haven't been charged or convicted either, yet they're American citizens.
Yeah, and they're facing jail time with no bail for allegedly trespassing at the Capitol is... Video now shows Capitol Hill police waving them in, opening the doors, unlocking them. So I think there is a valid comparison to the mistreatment alleged at Guantanamo Bay and the actual mistreatment of the January 6th prisoners, who, again, being held without bail for years is certainly an affront to justice. I think Keith Olbermann needs to be careful, though, if threatening the kind of attacks on the Supreme Court that he mentioned apply to being detained at Gitmo, then they need to make some room for Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi, and some of the other Democrats who've made the same kind of threats towards the Supreme Court justices when they don't like the rulings that they issue. I think the only thing you could really use Guantanamo Bay going forward is if you just develop an actual system of these military tribunals to try not just foot soldiers, as Andy mentioned, but those who are actually the leaders, the perpetrators, the planners that and the funders of terrorist attacks around the world. But I don't know that that's in the offing or that they can still get through the minutiae of what you have to deal with for military tribunals to be conducted in a way that would be seen as fair, transparent, reasonable as justice. And with respect to some of the torture that Andy referenced, I would agree with him that you don't use torture as a punishment. You don't use it as a means of getting, quote, justice. The only justification is if you're using harsh questioning to prevent big terror attacks. And if waterboarding can prevent the death of hundreds or thousands, then I think most people would say that's justified. If you're doing it just to hurt them and punish them, that's not.
Interesting. So, Andy, in our final last 2 minutes, do you think the remaining prisoners at Gitmo, are you optimistic that they're ever going to be given a fair trial, or are they just going to be detained indefinitely?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, you know, as I was saying, the only options, it seems to me, are that there's a plea deal, which involves them being able to stay at Guantanamo, and or efforts are made to bring them to the U.S. mainland. I must say, and, you know, it, just in terms of prosecuting terrorism, the other thing that's very clear throughout the whole of these 22 years, and it was evident throughout the whole of the Bush administration, was that if you want to successfully prosecute people accused of terrorism, the federal courts are the way to do it. There have been hundreds of successful prosecutions of terrorism in the federal courts since 9/11. They've carried on through every administration. Those are the ways that that terrorism should be prosecuted. And the failure to do so at Guantanamo is just one more sign of the absolute failure of the law and of justice when it comes to that facility. You know, and all of these are such compelling reasons for why it should never have been opened. And really everything that is possible to do to bring it to an end is absolutely necessary.
Well, Andy Worthington and Steve Gill, thank you so much for joining us. We will see what the future holds for Gitmo, possibly in the next administration. With less than a month in office, President Obama, in an attempt to fulfill a 2008 campaign promise, rushed to free 19 detainees from the prison at Guantanamo Bay. Now, six of these prisoners were released to Uruguay, a country which is proven to be a terrorist haven, as their laws actually prohibit the monitoring, the surveilling, and opposing travel restrictions on detainees, all because of their refugee status. Now, with the current crisis happening at the southern border of the United States and the lack of accountability of knowing who exactly is coming into this country, it is not unreasonable to ask, could Americans not only be letting terrorists cross the border, but more importantly, terrorists who have a known grievance against the United States because of actions which might have been committed to them while detained and questioned at Gitmo? We might never know the truth about what actually happened to the prisoners at Gitmo. But considering the reinstatement of those released prisoners have been linked back to the death of American soldiers, does this prove some in the American government value the treatment of terrorists over the safety of their own citizens? I'm Scott Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.